The morning light came through the tall windows of Marston Hall like thin gold thread. It touched the polished floor. It touched the silver tea service. It touched the back of a young woman who stood near the wall, her hands folded in front of her faded blue dress. Her name was Vivian Crane. She was 23 years old. Her dress had been new once, long ago, but the blue had washed out to something like the color of a tired sky. The lace at her sleeves had been mended twice. She knew this. She did not care. She had walked 9 miles in the rain to reach this place, and the dress had survived. That was enough. The drawing room smelled of beeswax and old roses. Someone had polished the floor that morning, and the smell of the wax was still strong. A clock ticked softly in the corner. Outside, a bird called once, then was quiet. Vivian kept her hands folded. She kept her chin level. She did not look at the other people in the room. There were four of them, all women, all dressed in silks that had not been mended. They had not spoken to her since she had arrived. They had only looked at her dress, then looked away, the way a person looks at something broken in the street. A door opened at the far end of the room. A tall man came in. He was older, with grey hair brushed neat against his head. He wore black. He carried a small book in his hand. "Miss Crane," he said. Vivian stepped forward. Her shoes were wet inside. She could feel the cold of the rain still in her stockings. She did not let it show in her face. "Yes, sir." "You are here for the position of companion to Lady Marston." "Yes, sir." The tall man looked at her dress. He did it quickly, but she saw. Then he looked at her face. "Lady Marston is not receiving today," he said. "She is unwell. Mr. Holland will see you instead. Please wait." He went away again through another door. Vivian went back to her place by the wall. The four women in silk had stopped pretending not to look at her. One of them, a thin woman with bright red hair, made a small sound in her throat. It was almost a laugh. Then she turned her head away. Vivian kept her hands folded. She counted the panes of glass in the tall window across the room. There were 12. She counted them again. 12. She had not eaten since the day before. She had spent her last coin on the coach from Halford, and the coach had broken a wheel 6 miles short of the village. She had walked the rest of the way. The rain had begun an hour before she arrived at the gate. The clock ticked. The bird called again outside. A small movement made her look up. A man was standing in the open archway at the side of the room. He had not come through the main door. He must have come from the garden because there were dark spots of rain on the shoulders of his coat. His boots were muddy at the toes. He was not tall exactly, but he took up space. His hair was dark and a little wet. His face was not young and not old. He had the kind of eyes that did not move quickly. He was looking at her. Vivian looked back. She did not know why. Perhaps because his gaze had been on her too long already, and looking away would have been a kind of flinching. She did not flinch. He did not smile. He did not nod. He simply looked. One of the women in silk noticed him then. She made a small, startled sound and stood up too fast. The other three stood up as well. They smoothed their skirts. They tried to arrange their faces. The man did not look at them. He looked at Vivian for another long moment. Then he turned and walked back through the archway and was gone. The red-haired woman sat down again. She looked at her friends. She looked at Vivian. Her mouth twisted in a small, ugly way. "Goodness," she said. "What a strange person to be wandering through the house. One can hardly tell the gentleman from the gardeners anymore." The other women laughed. One of them, who had a long, pale face, looked straight at Vivian and added, "Though I suppose one can hardly tell the ladies from the kitchen maids these days either. With the right cheap dress on, anyone can pretend." Vivian did not move. Her hands stayed folded. Her chin stayed level. She counted the panes of glass again. 12. The pale-faced woman waited for her to answer. When she did not, the woman laughed again, louder this time. Then she leaned across to her friend and said, in a voice meant to be heard, "Lady Marston must be desperate indeed. A girl like that, in a dress like that, walking through the front door as if she belonged. I would not let her near my dog. The red-haired woman covered her mouth with her hand. Her shoulders shook. Vivian's face did not change, but under the folded hands, her right thumb pressed hard against the bone of her left wrist. She held it there until the pain steadied her. A servant came in then. He bowed slightly to the women in silk. Then he turned to Vivian. "Miss Crane, Mr. Hollin will see you now. This way, please." Vivian followed him out. She did not look back at the four women. She walked behind the servant down a long hallway with paintings on the walls. The paintings were of men in old-fashioned coats and women in dresses with very high waists. Their eyes followed her as she walked. The servant stopped at a door and opened it. "Mr. Hollin," he said into the room. Then he stepped aside. Vivian went in. The room was a study. It was smaller than the drawing room and warmer. A fire was burning low in a stone fireplace, the smell of wood smoke mixed with the smell of leather and paper. Books lined the walls. There were two chairs in front of the fire and a desk under a window. The man behind the desk stood up when she came in. He was older, in his 50s perhaps, with kind, tired eyes and a careful mouth. He gestured to a chair on the near side of the desk. "Miss Crane, please sit down." She sat. The chair was deep and soft. She had to hold herself straight to keep from sinking back into it. "You walked from the village," Mr. Hollin said. It was not a question. "Yes, sir." "In this weather?" "Yes, sir." He looked at her for a moment. Then he sat down again behind the desk. He picked up a piece of paper and read from it. "Your letter says you are the daughter of a curate, that your father died 2 years ago, that you have been living with an aunt in Halford." "Yes, sir." "And your aunt can no longer keep you." Vivian kept her voice level. "She has 6 children of her own, sir. There is not room." "And no other family?" "No, sir." Mr. Hollin set down the paper. He folded his hands on top of it. "Miss Crane, I must be honest with you. The position is not a generous one. Lady Marston is old and often confused. She does not always know who is in the room with her. The companion who held the post before you stayed only 6 weeks before leaving. The one before her, 3 months. The work is not difficult, but it is lonely. The pay is small. The hours are long." "I understand, sir." "You are very young." "I am 23. Mr. Hollin almost smiled. "That is what I said." Vivian let her eyes go to the fire. The flames moved slowly, low and steady. The smell of the burning wood was sharp and clean. "Sir," she said, "I will not leave after 6 weeks. I will not leave after 3 months. I have nowhere else to go. If Lady Marston will have me, I will stay as long as she needs me." Mr. Hollin was quiet for a moment. Then he said, "I believe you." He picked up another piece of paper and dipped a pen in ink and began to write. "You will begin tomorrow. Today you will be shown to your room. You will be given supper. The housekeeper, Mrs. Trent, will go over your duties with you in the morning. Your pay will be £18 a year, paid each quarter. Your room and board are included. Are these terms acceptable?" "Yes, sir." "Then we are agreed." He held out the paper for her to sign. She wrote her name carefully. Her hand did not shake. Mr. Hollin took the paper back. He looked at it. Then he looked at her.
"One more thing, Miss Crane."
"Yes, sir."
"The man you saw in the drawing room, the one who came in from the garden."
Vivian's mouth went a little dry. She had not known anyone was watching.
"Yes, sir."
"That was the Duke of Ashendown, the owner of this house. Lady Marston is his aunt." Vivian did not move. She felt the words settle into her like cold water. "He arrived early this morning," Mr. Hollin said. "He likes to walk in the gardens before the day begins. He did not mean to be seen."
"I see, sir." Mr. Hollin watched her face. Whatever he saw there seemed to satisfy him. He nodded.
"Mrs. Trent will come for you shortly.
Welcome to Marston Hall, Miss Crane. She stood up. Her legs were tired. She made a small curtsy and left the room. In the hallway, she leaned her shoulder against the wall for 1 second. Only one. Then she straightened and went on. The man in the garden had been the Duke, the man with the wet coat and the muddy boots, the man who had looked at her too long. She did not know what to do with the thought, so she set it down, the way she set down everything she could not yet use, and she followed Mrs. Trent up the back stairs to her new room. The room was small and clean. There was a narrow bed with a grey blanket, a washstand with a chipped white basin, a small chest of drawers, and one window that looked out over the kitchen garden. A candle sat on the chest in a brass holder. Mrs. Trent was a wide woman with hands like a farmer's. She set a tray on the chest. There was bread and cheese and a small bowl of soup and a cup of weak tea. "You eat that," she said. "All of it. You look like a ghost." "Thank you. Tomorrow at 6, the kitchen door. I'll show you the rest then." She left and closed the door behind her. Vivian sat down on the bed. The soup was still hot. She ate slowly. The bread was good. The cheese was sharp. She drank the tea. When the food was gone, she set the tray on the floor and lay down on the bed without taking off her dress. She did not cry. She had not cried in 2 years. She did not know if she still knew how. But she lay there and listened to the house, and somewhere far away she could hear footsteps on a wooden floor, and somewhere closer she could hear the wind in the chimney, and she closed her eyes. In a different part of the house, the Duke of Ashendown stood at the window of his study and watched the rain start again. His name was Crispin Vale. He was 31 years old. He had been the Duke for 7 years, since his father had died of a fever in a hunting lodge in the north. He had not wanted to be the Duke. He had been a second son who had planned to read law. His older brother had been the one trained for the title. His older brother had died at 24 of a stupid fall from a stupid horse, and 4 years later his father had died too, and Crispin had become what he had never planned to be. He was good at it. That had surprised him. He was careful with money, careful with people, careful with land. He kept the estates running. He kept the tenants fed. He attended Parliament when he had to and stayed away when he could. He did not marry. There had been a woman once, years ago, who had taught him something about himself he had not wanted to know. After her, he had stopped expecting much from people. He had not been cruel about it. He had simply become quiet. He was thinking now about the young woman in the drawing room. He had not meant to see her. He had come in from the garden through the side archway because he had not wanted to walk through the main hall in his muddy boots. He had passed through the drawing room because it was the shortest way to his study. He had seen 4 women in silk dresses sitting on the long sofa. He had seen 1 woman in a faded blue dress standing by the wall. He had stopped. He did not know why he had stopped. The other women had been arranged like flowers for him to look at. The one by the wall had been arranged like nothing. She had been simply there, hands folded, eyes on the window, counting something he could not see. She had looked at him when she had felt his eyes on her. She had not flinched. She had not smiled. She had looked back the way a person looks at a tree or a stone, without performance, without calculation, with the simple courtesy of one human being acknowledging another. Then he had walked on. He had been in his study now for an hour. He had read 3 letters. He had signed 2. He had not stopped thinking about the woman in the blue dress. He pressed his palm flat against the cold glass of the window. The rain ran down outside in long silver lines. Holin would have hired her by now. Holin always hired the ones who would stay. Holin had a feeling for which ones would last and which ones would crack. The Duke turned away from the window. He sat down at his desk. He picked up a pen. He set it down again. He thought about the 4 women on the sofa. He thought about the way they had stood up too fast when they saw him. He thought about the way the woman in the blue dress had not stood up at all, because she had not known she was supposed to. He sat for a long time and did not write anything. In the morning, Mrs. Trent showed Vivian the house. There were 3 floors and a cellar and an attic. There were 42 rooms.
There was a long gallery with paintings of dead veils going back 200 years. There was a chapel with a stained glass window of a saint Vivian did not recognize. There was a library with so many books that Vivian had to stop walking and just look.
"You'll meet her ladyship after breakfast," Mrs. Trent said. "She'll be in the small sitting room upstairs. She likes the morning light there."
"Yes, ma'am."
"Don't be afraid if she doesn't know you. She forgets things. Sometimes she'll call you by another name. Just answer to it. She doesn't mean any harm."
"Yes, ma'am."
"And don't go into the east wing. That's His Grace's private rooms. Nobody goes there but his man and the maid who does the fires."
"Yes, ma'am."
Mrs. Trent looked at her sideways. "You don't ask many questions."
"I do not need to know more than what you tell me."
Mrs. Trent almost smiled.
"Hmm."
Lady Marston was in the small sitting room upstairs. She was very old. Her hair was white and thin and pinned up under a lace cap. Her hands shook slightly in her lap. She was looking out the window when Vivian came in.
"Aunt," Mrs. Trent said gently, "this is Miss Crane. She is going to sit with you now."
Lady Marston turned her head. Her eyes were a soft, faded blue, the same color almost as Vivian's dress. She looked at Vivian for a long moment.
"You are not Mary," she said.
"No, my lady, I am Vivian. Mary used to bring me tea."
"I can bring you tea, my lady. Would you like some?"
"Yes." Lady Marston turned back to the window. "Mary brought it with sugar. 3 lumps."
"3 lumps. Yes, my lady."
Vivian went to the bell pull and rang for tea. Then she sat down in the chair across from Lady Marston and folded her hands. The morning passed. Vivian brought the tea. Lady Marston drank it slowly. She talked sometimes and was silent sometimes. She called Vivian by 3 different names over the course of the morning. Mary, Anne, and once, very clearly, Vivian. She asked about the weather. She asked if her brother was coming to dinner. Her brother had been dead for 30 years. Vivian said gently that she did not know, and Lady Marston nodded and looked out the window again. At noon, a maid brought a tray of soup and bread. Vivian helped Lady Marston eat. Lady Marston's hands shook too much to hold the spoon steadily, so Vivian held it for her. Lady Marston ate 3 spoonfuls and then was tired. Vivian wiped her chin gently with a napkin and helped her settle back against the cushions.
"You have a quiet voice," Lady Marston said.
"Thank you, my lady."
"Mary's voice was loud. I never liked it."
"I will try to keep mine quiet."
Lady Marston closed her eyes.
In a moment she was asleep. Vivian sat in the chair and watched her. The fire ticked softly in the small grate. The smell of the wood smoke was sweet. Outside, a thrush sang in the garden. Vivian folded her hands. She was tired. Her shoes had finally dried. The bone of her left wrist was still bruised where her thumb had pressed yesterday. She did not think about the man in the garden. She did not think about the Duke. She did not think about the 4 women in silk. She watched Lady Marston sleep, and she let the morning be what it was, which was quiet. And that was a gift she had not had in a long time. The Duke did not come to dinner that evening. The servants set a place for him at the long table in the dining room, but he sent word that he would eat in his study. Mrs. Trent told Vivian this in passing in the hall. It was not unusual, she said. His Grace often ate alone. Vivian ate in the kitchen with the other upper servants, Mrs. Trent, the butler whose name was Mr. Wren, the Duke's valet whose name was Pace, and the senior maid named Sarah. They were kind to her in a careful way. They did not ask her many questions. She did not ask them many either. After supper she went up to her room. She lit her candle. She washed her face in the basin. She sat on the edge of the bed and unpinned her hair. She had brought 1 book with her from her aunt's house. It was a book of poems by a man named Cooper. The pages were soft from being read many times.
She opened it to a page she liked and read a few lines by the candle. Then she closed the book and set it on the chest and blew out the candle and lay down. Outside, an owl called, then another. Then there was only the wind. Days passed. A week passed. The routine of the house settled around Vivian like a coat. She rose at 5:30. She washed and dressed and went down the back stairs. She had bread and tea in the kitchen. At 7, she went up to Lady Marston's room. She sat with her, read to her, helped her eat, took her on slow walks through the gallery when she was strong enough. In the afternoons, when Lady Marston slept, Vivian sat in the small sitting room and mended her own clothes. The blue dress was now mended at the elbows as well. The lace at the sleeves was holding. She had borrowed a needle from Mrs. Trent and a small spool of thread. She did not see the Duke. She heard him sometimes, his step on the floor below, his voice in the hall, low and short, giving instructions to Mr. Wren. Once, late at night, she heard a piano being played somewhere in the house, slowly, badly, the same 5 notes over and over, as if someone who had not played in years was trying to remember. She did not see him. She did not look for him. But she thought about him sometimes, in the way a person thinks about a closed door. On her 10th day at Marston Hall, the 4 women in silk came back. They came in a carriage at noon. Mrs. Trent told Vivian about it while she was bringing up Lady Marston's tray. "Miss Petra Aldridge and her sisters," Mrs. Trent said, the corner of her mouth pulled down a little. "They were here last week as well, before you came. The day you arrived, they were here too. They left just after you went up." "I remember. They've come to take tea with her ladyship. Miss Petra is a sort of distant cousin. Her mother and her ladyship were friends long ago." "I see." Mrs. Trent set down the tray. She looked at Vivian. "They are not kind, those 4. They will say things. Don't take it to heart." "I won't." "Her ladyship gets confused when there are many people. Just stay near her. If she wants to leave, take her out." "Yes, ma'am." At 2 o'clock, the 4 women came up the wide staircase and were shown into Lady Marston's sitting room. They wore pale silks and small bonnets. Their cheeks were pink from the carriage ride. They smelled of lavender water and something sharp underneath it, like vinegar. Vivian stood up from her chair when they came in. She made a small curtsy. She did not speak. Petra Aldridge, the red-haired one, looked at her. Her eyes moved over the blue dress, the mended elbows, the mended lace. The corner of her mouth went up. "Aunt Eustacia," she said in a sweet voice to Lady Marston, "how lovely you look today. We brought you flowers." She held out a small bunch of late roses. Lady Marston looked at her. "Who are you?" "It is Petra, Aunt. Petra Aldridge. Don't you know me?" "No," said Lady Marston. She turned to Vivian. "Mary, take those flowers." Vivian took the flowers. "I will put them in water, my lady." She went to the side table where the small vase stood. She arranged the roses carefully. The smell of them was sweet and a little sharp, the smell of roses at the end of summer. Behind her, the 4 women settled themselves on chairs. Tea was brought. Petra Aldridge began to talk in her sweet voice about people Lady Marston did not remember and parties Lady Marston had not attended. The pale-faced one, whose name Vivian now knew was Miss Brier, watched Vivian over the rim of her cup. "And this is the new companion," Miss Brier said after a while. She said it as if she had just noticed Vivian was in the room. "I had quite forgotten she was here. She is so quiet." "Yes," said Petra, "like a mouse. A small brown mouse in a faded blue dress," she laughed, a small tinkling laugh, and her sisters laughed with her. Vivian did not turn around. She finished arranging the roses. She set the vase on the table. "My lady," she said softly to Lady Marston, "would you like to walk in the gallery for a little? The light is very pretty there now." "Yes," said Lady Marston, "I would like that." "She has only just sat down," said Petra. "Surely she can stay for tea with us." Her ladyship walks at this time every day, Vivian said. Her voice was quiet and even. It is good for her. She offered her arm. Lady Marston took it and stood up slowly.
My, my, said Miss Brier. How efficient. One would almost think she ran the house.
One would almost think, said Petra, she had been here for years instead of a fortnight. How quickly some people learn to make themselves at home in another woman's place.
Vivian walked Lady Marston to the door. She did not look at Petra. She did not look at any of them. She held the door open and let Lady Marston pass through first. Just before she followed, Petra said in a voice that carried,
Of course, in a dress like that, one cannot be very particular about one's place, can one? The other three laughed. Vivian closed the door behind her without looking back. In the gallery, the afternoon light came in long bars across the wooden floor. The portraits of the dead Vales looked down from the walls. Lady Marston walked slowly on Vivian's arm. She did not seem to have heard anything in the sitting room. She talked about a dog she had had as a child, a small brown dog with one white ear. His name was Posset, she said. He slept on my feet.
He sounds lovely, my lady. He bit the gardener once. The gardener was a bad man.
I see. They walked the length of the gallery. The bone of Vivian's left wrist hurt again, even though her hands were not folded this time. She made herself breathe slowly. When they reached the far window, Lady Marston stopped. She looked out at the rose garden below.
Mary, she said.
Yes, my lady.
I do not like that red-haired girl. Vivian was quiet for a moment.
She is very pretty, my lady.
No, said Lady Marston. Her voice was suddenly clear, as if a small piece of her old self had risen up through the fog.
She is not pretty. Pretty is what a kind face is. She is only well arranged. There is a difference.
Vivian looked down at the old woman. Lady Marston looked back up at her. Her faded blue eyes were steady for one moment, and then the moment passed, and she was smiling vaguely at the window again.
Posset would have bitten her, she said.
I am sure he would have, my lady.
They walked back slowly.
The four women had gone by the time they returned to the sitting room. Mrs. Trent was there, clearing the tea things. She gave Vivian a quick look that was not quite a question and not quite an apology.
Her ladyship is tired, Vivian said. I will help her to her bed.
Yes, miss.
That night, Vivian sat on the edge of her bed in her small room and looked at the candle for a long time. She did not cry. She thought about the words Petra had said. She thought about the way Miss Brier had watched her over the teacup. She thought about the smell of the lavender water and the sharper smell underneath it. She thought about the way she had not turned around, had not spoken, had not given them what they wanted. She had taken Lady Marston out of the room. That had been the only thing to do. She had done it. It was enough. It would have to be enough. She blew out the candle and lay down. What she did not know was that in the room below, the Duke of Ashendown had been sitting at his desk that afternoon when his butler had brought him a piece of news.
Miss Aldridge and her sisters have called on her ladyship, Your Grace.
Crispin had not looked up.
Hmm?
Her ladyship's new companion took her out to walk in the gallery.
Crispin had looked up then.
Why?
Mr. Wren had hesitated.
I could not say, Your Grace. But Sarah, who was bringing in fresh tea, heard Miss Aldridge speaking to the companion before they left.
Speaking how?
Mr. Wren's mouth had pulled into a thin line.
Not kindly, Your Grace.
Crispin had set down his pen.
Tell me exactly what was said.
And Mr. Wren had told him.
Crispin had listened in silence.
When Mr. Wren finished, Crispin had said only,
Thank you. That will be all.
Mr. Wren had bowed and left. Crispin had sat at his desk and looked at the wall.
So that was how it was. He had known Petra Aldridge for years. He had known her mother.
He knew the family was poor and proud and clever. He had known that Petra had hopes about him, the way many young women in the county had hopes about him. He had not encouraged her. He had not discouraged her either, because to discourage her would have been to acknowledge the hope, which he had not wished to do.
He had thought her harmless. Vain, yes. Calculating, yes. But harmless. He had been wrong. He thought about the woman in the faded blue dress, walking out of the sitting room with his aunt on her arm, not turning around, not answering. He thought about her counting the panes of glass on her first morning. He stood up. He went to the window. The rose garden below was full of late roses. The light on them was gold. He stood there for a long time.
The next morning, Vivian was in the gallery with Lady Marston when she came around the corner and almost walked into him. She stopped. She made a small curtsy.
"Your Grace." Lady Marston blinked up at him. "Crispin," she said. "Good morning, Aunt."
He bent and kissed the top of her white head. He did it gently. Vivian looked down at the floor.
"This is Mary," said Lady Marston. "She brings me tea."
"This is Miss Crane, Aunt. Her name is Miss Crane."
"Is it?" Lady Marston looked up at Vivian.
"Mary, is your name Crane?"
"Yes, my lady."
"Oh," Lady Marston seemed satisfied with that.
"Aunt, may I borrow Miss Crane for a few minutes? I would like to speak with her."
"Yes, yes. Bring her back." He offered his arm to his aunt and walked her slowly to a small chair in a window alcove. He settled her there. He arranged a shawl over her knees. He did all of this carefully, with the patience of someone who had done it before. Then he turned and looked at Vivian. He gestured with one hand to a place further down the gallery, away from Lady Marston. Vivian went where he gestured. He followed. They stopped beneath the portrait of a man in a powdered wig.
"Miss Crane," he said.
She kept her eyes on the second button of his coat. It was easier than his face.
"Your Grace."
"You came to this house 10 days ago."
11, Your Grace."
11. A small pause. "On the first day, 4 women in this house spoke to you in a manner that should not have been used in my house. Yesterday, they did so again. I am told you did not respond."
Vivian did not say anything. She did not know what he was asking. He waited.
"They did not require a response, Your Grace."
"No," he said. "They did not. But many people would have given one.
I do not know what good it would have done."
He was quiet for a moment. He was looking at her face. She could feel it. She kept her eyes on the button.
"Miss Crane, will you look at me, please?"
She lifted her eyes. His face was very close and yet not close at all. A proper distance, the distance of a master speaking to a servant in a gallery. But his eyes were steady on hers, the way they had been that first morning across the drawing room. He did not look away.
"I would like," he said slowly, "to apologize for what was said to you in my house."
"Your Grace, you do not need to."
"I do."
She stopped.
"It is my house," he said. "What was said in it was said under my roof. I am responsible for that. I am sorry."
Vivian's throat felt tight. She did not know what to do with this. She had been ready for unkindness. She had not been ready for this.
"Thank you, Your Grace," she said.
He nodded once.
"Miss Aldridge and her sisters will not be invited again."
"Your Grace."
"It is not your concern, Miss Crane. It is mine. It is done."
She did not say anything. She felt very strange. She felt as if she had been standing in a cold room for a long time, and someone had opened a door to a warm one, and she did not yet know whether to go through.
"My aunt is fond of you," he said.
"She is very kind, Your Grace."
"She is not very kind, in truth. She has not been kind to her companions in the past. They have all left her."
"She is kind to me."
"Yes."
He looked at her for another moment. "I have noticed that." He gave a small bow then, the smallest possible bow, the kind a man gives to a person he respects, but cannot acknowledge openly.
Then he turned and walked back to his aunt, and helped her up from the chair, and offered Vivian his arm with the old woman on the other side, and the three of them walked back down the gallery together, in silence.
When they reached Lady Marston's sitting room, the Duke handed his aunt over to Vivian's care, and bowed to them both, and walked away.
Vivian settled Lady Marston in her chair. She rang for tea. She moved through the next hour as she had moved through every hour before it. But something inside her had shifted, in some small place she could not name. That night, in her small room, she did not blow out the candle right away. She sat on the edge of the bed and looked at the flame for a long time. The days went on. She did not see him again for some time after that. He was busy, she gathered, with the business of the estate. She heard his name in passing, a tenant matter, a letter from London, a meeting in the village. She did not see him. But small things began to be different in the house. A new pair of shoes appeared one morning outside her door. They were sturdy and plain, and in her size. There was no note. Mrs. Trent, when asked, said only, "His Grace thought you might need them. He saw yours were wet through that first day." "He saw my shoes." "He sees more than he lets on, miss." The shoes fit. A week later, when the weather turned colder, a wool shawl appeared in the same place. Grey, plain, warm. Again, no note. Again, Mrs. Trent only said, "His Grace remembered the cold in the gallery last week." Vivian thanked her and took the shawl up to her room. She did not know how to thank him. She did not know if she should. She thought about it and decided that he had not given her a chance to refuse, and that he had not given her a chance to thank him either, and that perhaps this was on purpose. So she wore the shawl and the shoes and said nothing, and once when she passed him in the hall, she made a small curtsy that was perhaps a fraction deeper than necessary, and he gave her a small nod that was perhaps a fraction longer than necessary, and that was all. One afternoon Mrs. Trent came up to the sitting room while Lady Marston slept. She had a strange look on her face. "Miss," she said quietly, "I thought you should know something." "Yes?" "You remember old Tom, the gatekeeper's father, who lives in the cottage by the South Road?" "I have not met him, but I have heard of him." "He is very ill. The doctor came yesterday from the village." "I am sorry to hear it." "The doctor's bill will be more than the gatekeeper can pay. The family has been worrying." "Yes." Mrs. Trent looked at her. "His Grace paid it. He went himself, in the rain, 2 nights ago, after the doctor had gone. He sat with old Tom for an hour. He told no one. The gatekeeper only found out this morning when the doctor came back and said the bill had been settled." Vivienne did not say anything. "His Grace told me last night, when I asked, that I was not to mention it to anyone. So please, I will not say a word." "I thought you should know." "Why?" Mrs. Trent looked at her for a long moment. "I do not know, miss. I just thought you should." She went out. Vivienne sat for a long time after that with her hands folded in her lap. She watched Lady Marston sleep. The fire ticked in the grate. The afternoon light moved slowly across the floor. She thought about a man in a wet coat going through the rain to sit with a sick old man and pay a bill that did not concern him and tell no one about it. She did not know what to do with the thought. She kept it. The next time she saw him was 3 weeks later. It was an evening in the small dining room. Lady Marston was well enough to come down for supper. She had insisted. Mrs. Trent had dressed her in a gown of soft grey and combed her white hair carefully. Vivian walked her down on her arm. The Duke was already standing by the fire. He had on a dark coat and a clean white shirt. He looked, Vivian thought, tired. "Aunt," he said, going to her, "I am glad you came down. Crispin, where have you been? I have not seen you in months." "I was here yesterday, Aunt." "Were you?" "Oh." He helped her into her chair. Then he looked at Vivian. He gestured to the chair opposite his aunt. "Miss Crane, please join us." Vivian hesitated. "Your Grace, I usually eat in the kitchen." "Tonight you will eat with us. My aunt does not like to dine without her companion, and it would be a kindness to me as well." She did not know what to say to that. She sat down. The food was brought. There was soup and a roasted bird and a kind of pudding she did not know the name of. She ate slowly. She did not say much. Lady Marston talked, sometimes to her nephew, sometimes to Vivian, sometimes to a person she called William who was not in the room. The Duke ate quietly. He answered his aunt patiently. Sometimes he looked across the table at Vivian. Sometimes she looked back. Sometimes neither of them looked. After the pudding, Lady Marston grew tired. She closed her eyes and let her head rest on the back of her chair. "I will take her up, Your Grace," Vivian said softly. "Stay a moment, Miss Crane. The fire is warm. She is sleeping. Let her rest." Vivian stayed. The Duke leaned back in his chair. He looked at the fire. The smell of the wood smoke was strong in the room. Outside, somewhere, a dog barked once, and then was quiet. "Miss Crane, Your Grace, I have been told that on the day you came to this house, you walked 9 miles in the rain because the coach lost a wheel." "Yes, Your Grace." "You did not mention it to anyone. It was not important. You arrived soaked through, with shoes that should have been thrown away 3 winters ago, and with 1 shilling in your purse, and you went into the drawing room to wait for your appointment as if you had just stepped out of a carriage." Vivian kept her eyes on the fire. Her throat was tight. "How do you know about the shilling, Your Grace?" "Mr. Holland mentioned it. He thought I should know." She did not say anything. "Miss Crane." "Yes." "That morning, when I came through the drawing room, I saw 4 women in silk dresses arranged on a sofa. I saw 1 woman in a faded blue dress standing against the wall." She did not move. "I am told it is not a kind thing to comment on what a woman is wearing, so I will not comment on the dress. I will only tell you this. When I came into the room, the 4 women on the sofa stood up too fast and tried to arrange themselves to be looked at. You did not stand up. You did not arrange yourself. You did not even know who I was. You were counting the panes of glass in the window." 12, she said before she could stop herself. "There were 12. He almost smiled. It was the smallest movement of his mouth, but it was there. "I noticed you, Miss Crane. I did not mean to. I have spent some years now not noticing women in drawing rooms. They have all looked the same to me, because they have all been doing the same thing. You were not doing it. So I looked." She made herself breathe. "I thought," he went on, "that you were perhaps a poor relation of 1 of the 4.
I went on through the room and out the other side and stood at my study window for an hour. Then Mr. Holland came in and told me he had hired a new companion for my aunt, and I asked her name, and he told me, and it was you." Vivian lifted her eyes from the fire and looked at him. "Your Grace, I have not finished, Miss Crane. Forgive me." She closed her mouth. 3 weeks ago, Miss Aldridge said something to you in my aunt's sitting room. Sarah, who was bringing in the fresh tea, heard what she said. She told Mr. Wren. Mr. Wren told me." Vivian's hand tightened on her napkin under the table. "I am told you did not answer." "There was nothing to answer, Your Grace." "There was something to answer. You chose not to. That is different." She did not say anything. "I went to my desk and sat for some time, and then I made a decision. I would like to tell you, Miss Crane, what that decision was." "Your Grace, you do not need to..." "I do." She fell silent. He leaned forward a little. The firelight moved on his face. "Miss Aldridge has been writing to me for 2 years. Her letters have been clever and frequent. Her mother has been writing to me as well. Her family is poor, and she is the eldest of 4 sisters with no brothers. I have known what she wanted. I have not encouraged her. I have not actively discouraged her either, because to do so seemed unkind, and because I did not believe she was capable of doing real harm." He paused. "I was wrong about that. I had decided to let it go on a little longer, because I am sometimes a coward about these things. After what Sarah told me, I wrote a letter that same evening. I sent it the next morning. The letter made it clear, in language that even she could not pretend to misunderstand, that there is no possibility, now or ever, of any connection between her family and mine. I sent a copy of the letter to her mother.
I added in the letter to her mother that if her daughters were seen in my aunt's house again, I would close the door against them personally. Vivian stared at him. That is what I did 3 weeks ago, he said. I tell you now because I want you to know that the matter is finished, and that you are not to be troubled by them again, and that none of this was because of me being kind. I do not feel kind. I feel angry. Miss Aldridge spoke to a woman in my own house in a way that no woman should be spoken to by a guest. She did it because she believed there would be no consequences. I have arranged for there to be consequences. That is all. Vivian did not say anything for a long time. Your Grace, she said finally. Yes? That is a great deal of trouble to take over four sentences.
Four sentences in my house, to a woman in my employ, by a guest of my aunt.
Yes.
Why?
He looked at her steadily. Because you walked 9 miles in the rain and arrived with your hands folded and counted the panes of glass and did not flinch when I looked at you. Because my aunt called you Mary and you answered to it without correcting her. Because you have not asked anyone in this house for a single thing in the 11 weeks you have been here, including the wages you have already earned. Because Mrs. Trent told me you have mended the elbows of your dress twice and the lace at the sleeves 3 times, and have not once asked for an advance on your pay to buy a new one.
How do you know?
Because I asked. After Miss Aldridge spoke to you, I asked Mrs. Trent. I asked Mr. Wren. I asked Sarah. I wanted to know what kind of person it was that they were speaking to. So I asked. And the things I was told made it clear that the woman they had insulted was someone who has spent her life being overlooked by people who were not fit to look at her in the first place. I will not have it happen in my house, so I have stopped it. His voice was very quiet at the end. The fire snapped once in the grate. Lady Marston breathed softly in her chair. Vivian looked down at her hands in her lap.
Your Grace, she said, I do not know what to say. You do not need to say anything, Miss Crane.
She stopped. She lifted her eyes again to his. The room was warm. The smell of the wood smoke was strong. Somewhere in the house, a clock was striking 9. Lady Marston stirred and settled again. He was watching her, and his eyes did not move. And for 1 moment time stretched and stretched, and there was only the firelight on his face, and the small, steady breathing of the old woman, and the heavy quiet of the room. He waited. He did not rush her. I had thought, Vivian said very slowly, that I had become invisible. After my father died, and my aunt was kind but had no room for me, and the world I had grown up in closed its doors one by one. I had thought that I had become a kind of small brown shape that people did not see anymore. I had decided that this was not the worst thing. There is a kind of peace in not being seen. Nobody can hurt what they cannot see. He did not speak. And then I came here, she said. And in the first 10 minutes, a woman I did not know said things to me that were meant to take even that peace away. And I did what I have learned to do. I did not respond. I counted things. I held myself very still. I waited. She drew a slow breath. I did not know that someone had seen me counting.
I did not know that someone had seen the dress, and the shoes, and the shilling, and decided that those things meant something other than what people usually decide they mean.
She looked at him. Your Grace, I do not know how to thank you. I do not know if I should. I am only your aunt's companion. I will only be here as long as she needs me, and then I will go somewhere else and do something else, and we will both go on as before. But I would like you to know that what you have done, the letter, and the shoes, and the shawl, and old Tom whom you sat with in the rain when you did not have to, these things matter to someone. They matter to me, even if I never have any right to say so. The Duke was silent for a long time. Miss Crane, he said at last. Yes. Mrs. Trent told you about Tom. She did. She was not to. I made her promise not to repeat it. He almost smiled again. She has always done what she thinks is right, regardless of what I tell her. I am glad of it, Your Grace. He looked at the fire. Miss Crane, I do not know what is to come of any of this. I am not in the habit of speaking to people about things like this. I have spent some years now being very careful about what I say to women, because I was hurt once, badly, by what I said to one. I have been quiet for a long time. She did not say anything. I do not want you to think that any of what I have done was meant to require anything of you. The shoes were because your shoes were wet. The shawl was because you were cold. The letter was because Miss Aldridge needed to be stopped. The thing with Tom had nothing to do with you. I do not want you to feel as if I have placed you in any debt. I do not feel I am in any debt, Your Grace. Good. I feel that I have been seen. That is a different thing. He looked at her. For a long moment, he simply looked at her. Then he gave the smallest possible nod. Yes, he said. I know. The fire moved in the grate. Lady Marston sighed in her chair. Miss Crane? Yes. My aunt is sleeping. Will you let me help you take her up? Yes, Your Grace. He stood. He bent over his aunt and lifted her gently. She weighed almost nothing now. He carried her like a child, slowly, carefully. Vivian walked beside him with the shawl, ready to put it over the old woman if she stirred and felt cold. They went up the wide staircase together in silence. The house was very quiet. There were candles in the wall sconces. The shadows moved against the walls as they passed. In Lady Marston's room, he laid her on her bed. Vivian pulled the cover over her. The old woman did not wake. She breathed softly, evenly.
They stood for a moment on either side of the bed, looking down at her.
She is very fond of you, he said quietly. I am very fond of her. Thank you, Miss Crane, for staying. The others did not. I will stay. I know. He moved toward the door. She followed. In the doorway, he stopped and turned to her. The hallway behind him was dim. A single candle burned at the far end. The smell of the candle wax and the wood of the old floorboards filled the air. Somewhere below, the clock struck the half hour. Miss Crane, he said. Your Grace. He looked at her, and the look was steady, and the look was honest, and the look was a question that he was not yet asking out loud. I am not asking anything of you tonight, he said. I want that to be clear. It is clear. But I would like, if you would allow it, to spend more time in the company of my aunt while you are with her. In the afternoons, when she is awake. If that is acceptable to you. Vivian thought about this carefully. It is acceptable to me, Your Grace. She would be glad, and I have no objection. Thank you. He bowed, the smallest bow, the same bow as before. Then he turned and walked away down the dim hallway. Vivian stood for a moment in the doorway. She watched him go. Then she closed the door softly behind her and turned out the lamp by Lady Marston's bed and went up to her own small room. She did not light her candle. She sat on the edge of the bed in the dark. She listened to the house breathing around her. She listened to her own heart, which was beating a little fast. She thought, "This is not a story I know how to read." She thought, "I will do nothing. I will wait. I will see." She lay down and pulled the blanket up. She thought she would not sleep. But she did, almost at once. Autumn deepened. The trees in the park turned gold and then bare. The mornings were cold, and the rooms smelled of wood fires and damp wool. The Duke kept his word. In the afternoons, when Lady Marston was awake, he came up to the sitting room. He sat in the chair by the fire and read aloud from books, sometimes poetry, sometimes history, sometimes a newspaper if his aunt asked for the news. His voice was low and even. Lady Marston listened with her eyes closed and a small smile on her face. Vivian sat in the chair by the window with her mending. She did not interrupt. She did not perform. She listened. Sometimes Lady Marston would ask a question, and the Duke would answer it.
Sometimes Lady Marston would say something that did not make sense, and the Duke would treat it with the same patience as if it had.
Once, when Lady Marston was confused about who he was, she turned to Vivian and said, "Mary, who is this kind gentleman?"
"That is your nephew Crispin, my lady. He has come to read to you."
"Oh,"
Lady Marston looked at him, "you are very kind. Are you married, young man?"
"No, aunt. You should be married. A house needs a mistress."
"I have not found the right person, aunt."
"Nonsense. Look harder."
He did not look at Vivian. Vivian kept her eyes on her mending, but she felt the heat in her face.
"Yes, aunt," he said gently. "I will look harder."
Lady Marston nodded and closed her eyes. The afternoons went on. The room grew warmer. The light through the window grew lower as the season deepened. Vivian began to know the sound of his step in the hall before he reached the door. She began to know which books he liked. She began to know the small things he did with his hands, the way he turned a page, the way he closed a book at the end of a chapter, the way he set the book down on the small table by his chair. He began to know things about her, too. He noticed that she always took the chair by the window. He noticed that she always brought a piece of mending, so that her hands had something to do. He noticed that when he read certain lines of poetry, her hands would slow on the cloth, and her eyes would go to the window for a moment. He never commented on these things, but he noticed them. One afternoon in late October, Mrs. Trent came up to the sitting room with an urgent look on her face. "His Grace's compliments, miss. He asks if you will come down to the small parlour. There is a person in the house who wishes to speak with you."
Vivian looked at her.
"With me?"
"Yes, miss."
"Who?"
Mrs. Trent's mouth was thin.
"Your aunt from Halford, miss. Mrs. Quigg. She has come in a chaise."
Vivian stood up slowly. She had not seen her aunt in 3 months. She had written twice and received one short reply.
"Will you sit with her ladyship while I am gone?"
"Yes, miss. Take your time. His Grace is with her."
Vivian went down.
In the small parlour, the Duke was standing by the window. Her aunt was sitting in a chair by the fire. Her aunt looked older than Vivian remembered. Her bonnet was very fine. She was eating a small cake.
"Vivian!"
Her aunt stood up. She came forward and took Vivian's hands. Her hands were soft and cold.
"My dear girl, you look well. You look very well."
"Aunt, this is a surprise."
"Yes, well, I have come a long way to see you, my dear. I have come on a matter of great urgency."
The Duke had not moved from the window. He was watching the conversation. He did not speak.
"What matter, aunt?"
"My dear, you must come home with me at once, today. There is a man, a very respectable man, a Mr. Carrow, who has a shop in Halford. He has been asking after you. He is a widower with 2 small children. He has property. He is willing to take you off our hands. Off your hands, I mean. He is a kind man, Vivian. You will not get another offer like this."
Vivian stood very still.
"Aunt," she said, "you told me 3 months ago there was no room for me in your house. You told me I had to find a position. I found one. I am here. I have an agreement with this household. I will not break it."
"My dear, an agreement with a household is not a marriage. Mr. Carrow is offering you a home of your own, children, a future. You cannot mean to stay here as a servant for the rest of your life. You are not a servant, Vivian. You are a gentleman's daughter."
"I am Lady Marston's companion."
"You are a paid companion. It is the same thing."
The Duke spoke then, quietly, from the window. "Forgive me, madam, it is not quite the same thing."
Mrs. Quigg turned. She smiled at him in a careful way.
"Your Grace, of course. I do not mean any disrespect to your generous offer of employment. I only mean that my niece has a future to consider, and Mr. Carrow's offer is not one to be refused lightly."
"What is Mr. Carrow's age, madam?"
He is a mature gentleman, established."
"His age?"
56, Your Grace."
And your niece is 23. He is very kind, Your Grace, very kind.
The Duke looked at Vivian. Miss Crane, the decision is yours. You are not bound to this household in any way that would prevent your leaving. If you wish to go with your aunt today, no one will stand in your way. You have only to say so.
Vivian looked at him. She looked at her aunt. She looked at the fire.
Aunt, she said. Her voice was very even. Thank you for thinking of me. I will not marry Mr. Caro. I will stay here. Please give him my respectful regrets.
Mrs. Quigg's face changed.
Vivian, do not be foolish. You are 23. You have no other offer. You will not have one.
Look at yourself. Look at that dress.
The Duke's mouth tightened. He said nothing.
This is the dress I came in, Aunt. I have done well enough in it. I will do well enough in it for as long as I need to. Mr. Caro may have his shop and his two children. I wish him every happiness. But I will not be his wife.
You ungrateful...
Madam, said the Duke quietly, your niece has answered you.
Mrs. Quigg stood up. Her cheeks were red. Her bonnet trembled.
Very well. Very well. You will regret this, Vivian. You will come crawling back to my door in 5 years, and I will not open it.
I understand, Aunt. Mrs. Quigg gathered her shawl and her gloves. She did not look at the Duke. She walked to the door. At the door she stopped and turned.
You always thought you were better than us. Reading your poetry. Quiet little thing, watching everyone. Well, here you are. A servant in a stranger's house. Wearing a dress a beggar would refuse. I hope you are very proud.
She went out. The door closed behind her. The parlour was very quiet.
Vivian stood where she was. She did not look at the Duke. She kept her eyes on the fire. She did not cry. She had not cried in 2 years. She did not start now. But her hands were trembling. She folded them in front of her, the way she always did. She pressed the thumb of her right hand against the bone of her left wrist.
The Duke crossed the room slowly. He stopped a proper distance away.
Miss Crane?
Your Grace, please excuse my aunt. She is worried for me. She means well in her way.
She does not mean well.
Vivian was silent.
I am sorry that took place in my house, he said. I should not have allowed her in.
She is family, Your Grace. You could not have known.
I could have refused to leave the room.
You stayed?
Yes.
He looked at her.
I stayed because I did not want you to be alone in the room. I was prepared to throw her out myself if she touched you.
Vivian lifted her eyes to him.
Thank you, she said.
He did not answer that. He did not need to.
She drew a slow breath.
Your Grace, may I go back upstairs now?
Lady Marston.
Of course. Mrs. Trent is with her.
Yes.
She turned to go.
Miss Crane?
Yes.
What she said about the dress, it is not true.
Vivian stopped. She did not turn around.
The dress is fine, Your Grace.
It is not the dress that is fine, Miss Crane. It is the woman in it.
She did not move for a long moment. Then she made a small curtsy without turning around, and she walked out of the parlour and up the stairs to Lady Marston's sitting room. In the sitting room, she sat down in the chair by the window and picked up her mending and took 3 slow breaths and threaded her needle.
Mrs. Trent watched her quietly for a moment and then went out. Lady Marston was awake.
Mary, she said.
Yes, my lady.
Your face is wet.
Vivian touched her cheek. It was wet. She had not known.
It is only the cold from outside, my lady.
Mary.
Yes.
Crispin is a good boy. You should marry him.
Vivian almost laughed. She almost cried.
She did neither. She kept her hands steady.
He has not asked me, my lady.
He will.
Vivian looked at the old woman.
Why do you think so, my lady?
Lady Marston's faded blue eyes were clear for a moment.
Because he watches you the way his father watched his mother. I remember it. I was very young, but I remember.
Then she closed her eyes and was asleep. Vivian sat very still. She listened to the fire. She listened to her own breathing. She listened to the wind in the chimney. Outside, the autumn rain began to fall again, soft and steady against the glass. She did not know what was to come. She did not know what he meant to do. She did not know what she meant to do. She did know one thing. She was no longer counting the panes of glass. She lowered her hands into her lap and let them rest there. And she watched the rain. And she waited. 3 days later, in the late afternoon, while Lady Marston dozed, the Duke came up to the sitting room. He did not sit down. He did not pick up a book. He stood by the fire and he said, "Miss Crane, will you walk with me in the gallery for a moment?" She set down her mending. "Yes, Your Grace." In the gallery, the late afternoon light was coming in low through the tall windows. The portraits of the dead Vales watched them pass. He stopped beneath the portrait of a man in a powdered wig, the same portrait where he had spoken to her once before. "Miss Crane, Your Grace, I have something to say. I have been working out how to say it for some weeks. I do not believe I will say it well. But I will say it plainly, because you are a person who deserves plain words." She stood very still. Her hands were folded. "I had decided, before you came to this house, that I would not marry. I had been hurt once. I had decided that I was a man who would live alone. I had been content with this decision for some years." He paused. She waited. "On the morning you arrived, I came through the drawing room in muddy boots and saw a woman in a faded blue dress counting the panes of glass in the window. I have not been content since." Vivian's breath caught. She did not move. "I did not know what to do about it. I tried to dismiss it. I tried not to come up to my aunt's sitting room. I failed. I tried to think of you as a servant. I failed. I tried to think of you as a problem to be solved. I failed there too, because you are not a problem. You are a person. The only person, I think, that I have wanted to be in a room with in a very long time." He looked at her. The light caught one side of his face. His eyes were steady. "I am not making you a romantic offer, Miss Crane. I am too old to make a romantic offer, and you are too sensible to receive one. I am making you a plain offer. I would like to ask you to marry me.
I would like to ask if you will become the mistress of this house and the wife of a man who has spent some years now being too quiet and who would like very much to stop." The gallery was silent. The light moved slowly across the floor. Somewhere far below, a door closed softly. Vivian looked at him. Her hands were folded in front of her. Her heart was beating very slowly and very hard. She thought of her father, who had loved his books. She thought of her aunt, who had said she would come crawling back. She thought of Petra Aldridge and the silk dress and the words about the small brown mouse. She thought of the 9 miles in the rain. She thought of the shoes outside her door. She thought of old Tom in his cottage and the doctor's bill paid without a word. She thought of the way Lady Marston had said, "He watches you the way his father watched his mother." She thought of the man standing in front of her now, in his dark coat, with his careful hands, with his quiet, honest eyes. She did not cry, but her voice, when she spoke, was not quite steady. "Your Grace." "Yes." "If I say yes, it will not be because you are a duke." "I know." "It will not be because you have a house, or land, or money." "I know." "It will be because of the shoes, and the shawl, and old Tom, and the letter you sent to Miss Aldridge, and the way you carried your aunt up the stairs." "I know, Miss Crane." "It will be because you saw me when no one else did, and then you kept seeing me, even when I did not want to be seen." "Yes." She drew a slow breath. "Then yes,
"Yes, Your Grace, I will." He did not move for a moment. Then he reached out very slowly, and he took her folded hands in his, and he unfolded them gently, one at a time. He turned them over so that her palms faced up. He looked at them, at the small calluses, at the bruised place on the bone of her left wrist, where her thumb had pressed so many times. He bent his head and kissed neither hand, but only pressed his forehead, just for one moment, against the inside of her left wrist, where the bruise was. Then he straightened. "Thank you," he said. That was all. No grand kiss, no speech. Just two people standing in a gallery in late autumn light, with her hands in his, and the long line of his ancestors looking down at them from the walls. The wedding took place 6 weeks later, in the small chapel of Marston Hall. Lady Marston was well enough to attend. She sat in the front pew in a gown of soft grey and a lace cap, and held a small posy of late winter roses in her trembling hands. Mrs. Trent cried quietly throughout the ceremony. Mr. Wren stood very straight at the back.
Old Tom, who had recovered, was there too, in his best coat, holding his hat in his hands. Vivian wore a dress of dark green wool. It was simple and plain and warm. It was not the faded blue dress. The faded blue dress she had folded carefully and put in the bottom of a drawer in her old small room, because she could not bring herself to throw it away. It had walked 9 miles in the rain with her. It had stood by the wall. It had been mended at the elbows and the lace at the sleeves. It had been the dress she had worn when a man in a wet coat had come through a drawing room and had stopped and had looked and had not looked away. Mrs. Quigg did not come. She had not been invited. Petra Aldridge did not come. She had not been invited either. Vivian heard later that she had married a country squire in another county and was said to be very unhappy, and Vivian felt no satisfaction in this and no pity either. She only set the news down with the other things she had set down in her life and went on. A year passed. It was a soft evening in early autumn. The light through the tall windows of the small parlour was the colour of honey. The smell of wood smoke and beeswax was warm in the room. A fire burned low in the grate. Vivian sat in a chair by the window. She was mending a small shirt. The shirt was not for her. It was for a child not yet born. The child she carried beneath the green wool of her gown, a child due in late winter. Across the room, in his own chair, the Duke sat reading. He looked up when she shifted in her chair. His eyes went to her hands. "Are you tired?" "No, only a little." "Put it down. I will fetch you tea." "I can fetch tea, Crispin." "I would rather fetch it." He stood up and went out. She watched him go. She smiled just a little at the back of his head. Lady Marston had died in the spring, peacefully, in her sleep, with Vivian holding one of her hands and the Duke holding the other. Her last word had been, "Mary." Vivian had answered to it as she always had. Vivian looked down at the small shirt in her lap. She traced the stitching with one finger. The stitches were small and even. He came back with the tea. He set it on the small table beside her chair. He did not go back to his own chair. He sat down on the low stool at her feet, and he leaned his shoulder against the side of her knee, and he opened his book again. She set her hand on his hair. He did not say anything. Neither did she. Outside, somewhere in the garden, a bird called once. Then another. Then the wind moved softly in the chimney. The fire burned low. The light through the window grew gold, and then deepened into the colour of dark amber.
Neither of them moved. He had stopped being quiet. She had stopped counting. The room was warm and the house was theirs, and the long autumn evening went on without any need for either of them to say a word. Thank you for staying with this story until the very end. If this moved you, please like, share, and subscribe. Your support keeps these stories alive.